Thank you, Manu. Shishirara Gopinata ki jai, Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande Harivo. Hare Krishna, dear devotees. Welcome to the topical class. For those of you who are guests, here at the Radha Desh community, we have our Bhaktivedanta College. And every Tuesday, we have, it's called a topical class, where the students are asked to please come and attend the morning lecture, which is usually, I mean, not on a certain verse that we follow, but on a certain topic. And Yadunandan Maharaj asked me maybe some 10 days ago that if I could either choose a topic or maybe talk about the Japa retreat. So since we just had last week a very ecstatic Japa retreat here in Radha Desh with Sachinanand Swami, I thought that maybe it would be nice to just reflect on the Japa retreat, try to maybe refresh our memories of what we have learned, what the practices we've had, the practices given to us, and just try to, maybe have more or less an interactive class. I'll probably ask you a few things if you remember, and or maybe ask you to share some of your realizations or maybe experiences of the Japa retreat, so be ready for that. Okay, so let's say, to invoke some auspiciousness for today's class, I thought it would be nice to chant the 7th and 8th verse of Dupadashamrita, which was written by Srila Prabhupada, translated by Prabhupada, and he calls it the Nectar of Instructions. So, verse 7 says, "The holy name, character, pastimes, and activities of Krishna are all transcendentally sweet like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, or ignorance, cannot taste anything sweet, it is wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within his tongue, and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root." And verse 8. "Therefore, the essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities, and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Vraja, Goloka Vrindavan Dham, and serve Krishna under the guidance of devotees. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees, who are deeply attached to his devotional service. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedantam Swami Nityanam Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtatadesha Tarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, the holy name. Since we have just right now a course with Krishna Kshetra Prabhu on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I thought it would be maybe nice to talk about a little bit about how Kirtan started, how the congregational chanting of the holy name was spread into the streets. So, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Ghana to take initiation from his spiritual master, it said that at that point he opened the school of crying. This is when he was given the seed of bhakti, and he returned to Navadvip and he spread this bhakti, he spread the chanting of the holy name to everybody. However, he did that in two steps. The first step Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was spreading the holy name was that in the beginning he would perform Sankirtan and chanting the congregational, the holy names of the Lord in a very private place, in a very private group of people. Usually they would meet at Shiva Sangam. This is where some of the most famous kirtans would happen, where they would chant for 72 hours. And the reason why he would perform these kirtans privately is because he understood that in order to understand that the holy name is not different from Krishna. You need to have Shraddha, with a genuine faith that Krishna and his holy name are not different. So for this reason, he performed his kirtans only in a private group with his eternal associates. Even when, you know, the stepmother of Srivast Thakur, for example, tried to get into one of these kirtans to see, to experience what it means to chant with the, you know, with Lord Chaitanya, she wasn't allowed. They asked her to go out because Lord Chaitanya could feel that there was someone participating in this group who did not have enough faith to relish the holy names. And I can just imagine if I was probably there, or any one of us, I don't think we would be either allowed to participate in this kirtans. However, as I said, the reason for this, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed this private kirtans, was that he first wanted to give this experience to his eternal associates. He wanted to give the experience to his devotees. He wanted them to understand that the non-difference between the holy name and Krishna, so that when they are once out into the street to perform sankirtan, they will be able to actually give this faith to others as well. At that point, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, let's say, told them, he said, okay, it's enough, now it's time to take this kirtan into the streets. And in the Narasingha Purana, it is explained that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this way promoted kirtan to everyone, and even to the lowest of all. And it says, if one would partake in that kirtan, that person would become his, and he would become theirs. So just imagine, at that time, it was towards the end of the 15th, beginning of the 16th century, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked his devotees to go out and perform public kirtan. And at that time, India was governed by the Muslims. And whoever would perform any kind of Hindu practices in the street would be punished by death. The penalty was death. So imagine now, these devotees were chanting outside into the street. And we know the story about Jankazi coming. He's sending his soldiers, they're destroying the Mridanga, but they keep on chanting. And this is exactly that deep faith or Shraddha that Lord Chaitanya has given to his associates while they were performing kirtan privately. Because if anyone would come to us, imagine, and they would tell you, if you continue chanting, I'm going to kill you. I mean, would we really be able to continue chanting with that faith? I mean, I don't know, maybe not loudly, maybe in the mind, but definitely not loudly, you know. So this is the kind of faith that is actually required when we want to chant the holy name. The reason why the holy name is so potent and is so, let's say, powerful and important for our practice is explained in the Harinam Chintamani. It is said that in the Satya Yuga, the process for attaining perfection was meditation. If you remember Tulsi Priya Mataji, like 2 weeks ago in her topical class, she talked about the importance of introspection, and she was giving the example of Lord Brahma, how he was meditating for thousands and thousands of years in order to attain perfection, in order to understand what is his goal of life, what is the purpose of his life. So this is in Satya Yuga, this is a similar method. Meditation was considered to be the topmost practice. In Treta Yuga, the way to attain perfection was through performing sacrifices. We can even see in the scriptures in Srimad Bhagavatam, we have many stories about someone like King Yudhishthir, big personalities, performing sacrifices, trying to, you know, please the Lord through many Rajasuya sacrifices, these sacrifices, that sacrifices, that were actually meant for the upliftment of the whole world, for the upliftment of their consciousness and their spiritual souls. And then in Dwapar Yuga, the method for attaining perfection was deity worship, with very strict rules and regulations. However, it is said that in this present or degraded age of Kali, this is from the Harinam Chintamani, none of these previous means can be carried out correctly due to the materially conditioned nature of whole humanity. And for this reason, the new path to salvation within this age has become the chanting of the holy name. In contrary to all other processes, they can't be performed in this age because we are too degraded and contaminated. And the Lord's holy name remains at all time present with us and attained and untainted with this material, let's say, contamination. In this way, the holy name becomes chanting the holy name the most efficient process for this age. If you want to understand why it is that, let's say, we're not able to perform sacrifices or we're not able to worship the deities, you know, in one way it is very simple to understand, at least to my understanding, try to understand in a little way, it's that imagine after so many yugas of being in this material world, the samskaras, the material samskaras and deep-rooted impressions we have on us, they simply make us understand and perceive reality only through our senses, through our material senses. Only what we see with our eyes, with our material eyes, is what we take as reality. Only what we smell with the material sense of smell is what we perceive as reality. Only what we can touch, what we can feel, what we can hear with this material senses, we consider as reality. But the spiritual world, the spiritual abode in Krishna, they have nothing to do with material world. They're not tinged. Krishna is not tinged by the three modes of material nature, although he is in each and every atom. So for us on our own to understand the, you know, the potency of anything spiritual is pretty much, you know, almost impossible unless we receive the mercy. But since Krishna is very merciful, it is explained that he is the all-powerful and the all-merciful, he actually has incarnated in the form of his holy name. It's called his Kripa Shakti. Lord Krishna has come in the form of his holy name to actually save us, to actually give us the experience of direct association with Krishna. It's, you know, I was thinking about this a little bit and I was just, you know, trying to understand, you know, if I'm presently sitting right now here on this, you know, this seat, I cannot be at the same time present in the kitchen cooking, right? You know, I cannot be somewhere else swimming, I cannot be reading, I'm just right now here, and this is how we perceive this world. But with Krishna it's different. He can be, you know, at one place, and then someone else who chants his holy name, he's also there. And someone who remembers him, he's also with this person. Someone who thinks of him, he's with that person as well. So this is the potency of Krishna. You know, this is the potency of the spiritual world. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, he has given us instructions how to chant the holy name. And our whole Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is actually based, what Prabhupada has given to us, on the instructions of Lord Chaitanya. All our acharyas, from the six Goswamis, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta, all their books are actually based on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, on different aspects, on how to chant, what the mood is, what the practices are. It's all based on Lord Chaitanya and his example. So, Srila Prabhupada has explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that actually simply by chanting the holy name, because it's not different from Krishna, we're actually allowed to have direct association with the Lord. And for that, you know, something like a japa retreat is actually very important and can be very useful, because it allows us to come together in a very, let's say, intense association and to actually talk about the holy name, to hear about the holy name and to chant very focused. And for that, Sachinanand Maharaj, I remember he was explaining, actually, how many of you have been at a japa retreat? Quite many, nice. If you remember, maybe Sachinanand Swami, he explained what absorption means, absorption, chanting of the holy name. He says, absorption in chanting of the holy name is how we can measure our advancement. The moment we take up our japa is where we know where we are in spiritual life. You know, how you deal, how you interact with the holy name, how important chanting to you is how you see how the relationship with Krishna is. The way you treat the holy name, the way you treat devotees is how you can see how you treat actually Krishna in the spiritual world. Is it a reality for you? Is it your life? And he explained a lot. We had, in the morning he would give classes, then we had a workshop, come to that later, explain a little bit the practices. We had Krishna Katha, we had chanting, kirtan and singing. And the means of all that is actually to come together and to really dive into the holy name, to really dive into chanting. And even if, you know, I mean, I think about, I'm speaking to myself right now, you know, I'm not on a certain high level of chanting the holy name, but when we come all together, and the effort is actually intensified, the effort, the results of chanting the holy name are given to us manifold, because many devotees come together and many devotees try to chant. So this is one of the reasons why japa retreat is, you know, can be useful. And Let me see. Okay. Yeah, Satchinanda Maharaj, he explained that there's two steps, and actually two important parts of this path in absorption in the Holy Name. One is Shraddha, which I'm mainly trying to focus on here, and the other one is avoiding offenses, avoiding aparad. And he was explaining what, in the morning we recite the 10 offenses of the Holy Name, not because we should be reminded of how bad we are, but actually in order to us to understand the importance of avoiding these apparatus. He gave the example of, a tree. And let's say if that tree represents our bhakti, our devotion. It says if you do commit any offenses, like for example, we don't have enough faith in the Holy Scriptures, it's like cutting the branches of the tree. But if we actually, the worst offense, if we criticize devotees, we actually start to uproot this tree. And this is much, much more dangerous than just cutting, a branch of the tree. And for this reason, he explained that the way we can actually avoid making these offenses, or the way we can, let's say, diminish the reactions of criticizing devotees, is that first of all, we should stop criticizing. Second of all, we should start to glorify these devotees. So this is a very important part, chanting the Holy Name, to keep in mind, avoiding offenses. And the second one is Shraddha. Having deep faith in the Lord. And as I explained by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his example of his eternal associates, a deep faith and genuine faith he had. And does anyone remember what the price? Actually, I already said it, but what three types of how we can purchase the Holy Name in the marketplace? The Holy Name, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Does anyone remember how much? Yeah, he says that, I really like that part actually. I really, I thought it's like very, very practical, a very nice example. He explained that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about the marketplace of the Holy Name. That, who opened the marketplace? Lord Nityananda, right? Says Nadia Godruma Nityananda Mahajan Patya Chanam Hata Jivanakaran. Lord Nityananda has opened the marketplace of the Holy Name in Nadia. And what is the price to play in that faith, right? So he was explaining how Bhaktivinoda Thakur would elaborate on that marketplace of the Holy Name. He says that the minimum amount we have to give, the minimum, let's say the least amount of so called money, it's 1/8 of a coin, is that faith. That's the minimum qualification or attitude or however you want to call is faith that we need to give. And our faith is not something that actually we can create with our material mind or with our material intelligence. Faith comes from within the soul. And the moment a little bit of faith is within us for the process of devotional service, it is considered to be equal as the awakening of the spirit soul from the deep sleep of material existence. So the process of how we come to this marketplace with this faith is that we have to actually approach the Holy Name with having a certain, at least some sort of faith within us. And whatever we give in this marketplace, it says it's not only that the Holy Name reveals itself accordingly, but because of Lord Nityananda's mercy, our faith becomes even strengthened and deepened many, many, many full times. So this is the beauty of spiritual life. Whatever little bit we have, whatever little bit we actually give into performing, our devotional service, chanting the Holy Name, we actually receive, many, many fold times back. He gave the example, for example, if we sit in the evening and we perform kirtan, whatever little faith we have, that experience we get, the way the Holy Name will be revealed to us will actually strengthen our faith more and more. Explained further on that that faith actually has to be genuine faith. Genuine faith means that, I'm here, I'm chanting the Holy Names for the pleasure of Krishna. There's nothing selfish behind chanting these Holy Names. Because as long as we chant or perform devotional service, by having material desires with it, this is actually what we will get. We will get material results. It says the Holy Name is like Chintamani. chanting the holy name and having certain material desires will actually give us the result of these material desires. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur continued explaining, does anyone remember what the next amount is we can give? Half a coin, what does it represent? Half a coin in the marketplace. Which level of devotional advancement? The first one was Shraddha, that's 1/8 of a coin. If you give half of a coin, it represents the level of Nishtha or steadiness. So the holy name, according to on what level we are and what we give to the holy name, this is actually how the holy name will reveal itself to us. So on the level of Nishtha or steadiness, the revelation of the holy name will be much more deeper than only on the level of Shraddha. And then the last, when you pay a full coin, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained, the full coin is actually bhava. It represents bhava. So if you come and we chant the holy name with bhava, with actually deep feelings of the relationship with Krishna, then the revelation of the holy name will be more and more. So in this way, I like this example very much because in one way it shows that the holy name is not limited. You know, spiritual life is not limited. The potency of the holy name is as equal as the potency of Krishna. And it's only waiting to reveal itself to us depending on, you know, our faith and our devotional practices and our intentions. Bhaktivinoda Thakur further on explains that the way we approach chanting the holy name is before starting to chant, we actually have to introduce ourselves, right? We have to say who we are and what we are about to do. So he says we have to come to Krishna and we have to introduce ourselves as servants of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, before chanting japa every time, what do we chant? Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. In this way, what we are saying is, my dear Lord Krishna, I have no qualifications to chant your holy name. But because you have appeared in your most merciful incarnation as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please give me the mercy to experience, you know, the holy name, to chant the holy name. And later on, Bhaktivinoda Thakur went on explaining that while chanting in this mood, there are certain qualities we develop which then in turn enhance again our devotional practice. These qualities are humility and meekness and tolerance and patience. And further on and further on, we develop all the spiritual qualities of, you know, devotees. And then he also went on explaining how kirtan should be performed. He said kirtan should be performed with kartals and mridanga, and one should dance ecstatically in the kirtan. Not according to the beat of the mridanga, but according to one's devotional feelings at that point. Shishirada Gopinata ki jai. Okay, let me see what else we have here. Jai Shishirada Gopinata ki jai. Yeah, so coming back to reflecting on the japa retreat and to the point of faith, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave us two practices we should perform. He said, first of all, we should like chant the holy name without offenses, and then once we have come to the stage of chanting it without offenses, we should actually imbibe different devotional moods. And the mood that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually has brought to us, in which we should chant the holy name, is Vipralamba Bhav, actually the mood of intense mood of separation from Krishna. And of course, you know, in one way, we cannot, like right now, chant on the level of Vipralamba Bhava as Lord Chaitanya did. You know, he's Radha and Krishna combined. But we can very much, you know, relate to it because we are spirit souls in this material world and we are separated from Krishna. And for that, it is enough to even know that it's enough to cry out for Krishna. It's not enough to understand that we are actually pretty much lost without him. So this is a certain mood in which we can chant the holy name. The mood of crying. It says that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has opened the school of crying for us. And Gaura Govinda Maharaj in Bhuvaneshwar, in his temple, he has this sign. He said, I've opened the school of crying for those who are really serious about chanting, you know, that's the mood, like a child cries out for the mother. You know, there's different, of course, we're not limiting the holy name in any way. I'm not trying to say that's the only way we can chant. There's different explanation with chanting with gratitude and affection, respectful like affection, depending on the level we are. But, you know, what Prabhupada has also given to us, you know, the explanation of the holy name, my dear Lord, please accept me. It's really crying out to the Lord. And it's really something, I mean, hopefully we can do every day, cry out for the Lord. So, let me actually just summarize, because I don't want to go way too long from what I said so far. I've talked about the holy name, the marketplace of the holy name, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur explaining how 1/8 of a coin represents Shraddha. That's the very beginning of, you know, chanting genuine Shraddha. Half of a coin represents when we're on the level of Nishtha, and a full coin represents when we're on the level of Bhava. So whatever level we are at, from Shraddha to Prema, this is how the holy name will reveal itself to us accordingly, according to our mood. And for this reason, do you remember why Maharaj... For this reason, Maharaj explained the Bhakti triangle. Does anyone remember what was that? Bhakti triangle. Yeah? Yes, that's correct. So there's three items which are necessary in order for us, for Bhakti actually to flourish. So Bhakta, the devotees, Bhakti, devotion, and Bhagavan. And he called it the, you know, the Bhakti triangle. And what he explained is that what does a Bhakta represent? Bhakta, it actually represents, you know, Sambandha Gyan, our understanding and our relationship to Lord Krishna. You know, who we are and what is the relationship to God. And we are spirit soul in our relationship to God. For all of us, for all the souls that exist, is actually that we are His servants. You know, there's different, of course, there's different relationships with Krishna in the spiritual world, but each one of them starts from the level of dasya, service. So we can be sure in that we are definitely servants of Krishna. That's so much what we need to know in order, you know, to continue. And Sambandha Gyan, Maharaj used to talk in previous japa retreats a lot about this, a lot about the importance of actually connecting to Krishna while we chant, developing this relationship with Krishna, not only in chanting, but every day, whatever we do, having a certain intention before performing devotional service. And actually, I would like to tell you a story that very much inspired me very much about that relationship with Krishna. You want to hear it? It's from... So, once upon a time, I think I've mentioned it to some of you, but it's a nice story, it's very short. Once upon a time, there was a Brahmana in Vrindavan. And this Brahmana worshipped the deity of Krishna. And he worshipped this deity for many, many, many years. And as he was worshipping Krishna, he was praying to Krishna, please reveal yourself to me, show yourself to me. And he went on continuing. For many, many, and many years he used to worship Krishna, but Krishna never revealed himself to him. And at one point, this Brahmana, he said, this is too much. You know, Krishna is not revealing himself to me. I should just worship someone who is easily pleased. So let me start worshiping Lord Shiva. So what he did, he took a deity of Lord Shiva and he placed it above Krishna. And thinking that Lord Shiva, he is easily pleased, he will reveal himself for sure. So the moment he lit the incense, and as he started to worship Lord Shiva, the smoke from the incense started to go into the nostrils of the deity of Krishna. Krishna was trying to smell it. So the Brahman just thought, this is even way too much, you know. Now he wants to smell the incense I'm offering to Shiva, you know. So he took like little pieces of cotton, you know, what we use to make giviks, and he actually put it in the nostril of the deity of Krishna to block his nose that he can't smell the incense anymore. You know, and at that moment, when he actually did that, Krishna appeared to him. And that Brahmana, he was overwhelmed by devotional feelings, you know, seeing Krishna. And after some time, as he calmed down and Krishna gave him his mercy, he asked, Krishna, you know, I worshipped you for so many years, you know, in Vrindavan, you know, your deity, you've never appeared, you know, why now, all of a sudden, when I started to worship Lord Shiva, now you appear to me? And then Krishna told him, my dear Brahmana, the moment you put the cotton into my nose, you treated me as a person. So this is why I appeared. So I thought it's a very sweet story, you know, explaining Actually, Krishna really is a person. He really, I mean, not that we should go on putting things into Krishna's nose so that he appears, but, you know, but, you know, this mood of, you know, actually Krishna being very, very, very much, you know, receptive, actually being very much aware of what we are doing, very much aware of where our heart is and how we pray to him. This is what inspired me, this is, you know, this personal relationship. So this is what that bhakta aspect in devotion represents, this relationship with Krishna, sambandha gyan. Bhakti would represent abhideya tattva. Abhideya tattva means, you know, the process of devotional service, how to perform the process of devotional service. And if you remember in the japa retreat, Satchinanda Maharaj, he talked about the six steps of bettering japa. Anyone remember the six steps? Yeah, controlling the mind, that's one. Silence, yeah. I'm sorry? No, that wasn't, yeah. Controlling the mind, silence, yes. Three. Steadfastness, patience, perseverance, and contemplating the meaning of the mantra. This is you know, a part of when we look. So I've talked about sambandha gyan, the importance of developing a relationship with Krishna, and then now abhideya tattva. He gave us practically some of the process to better japa. So first of all was silence. What does silence represent, Mona? He said that, you know, when we chant the holy name, it should be our only activity at that point. We should understand this is direct service to Radha and Krishna. And we should not interrupt it. We should not interrupt this chanting of the holy name. He said, I really liked his expression, said, let the holy name come first and let everything else come later. You know, this is the mood of, this is a silence. This is what it means to chant, to really be absorbed. Mind control. Does anyone remember what was the practice for mind control that we did in the workshops? Hare. You know, concentrating the mind on the first Hare. Were you there, Mother Jabba? Yeah. He gave, you know, a very practical way how to control the mind. Because the mind is so unsteady, right? You know, Arjuna said in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna, the mind is so unsteady, it's, you know, seems to be easier to, you know, capture the wind than to control the mind. So the way we can control the mind by chanting is actually to focus our mind very, you know, very much intensely on the first Hare of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So we say, Hare Krishna, and we continue chanting. And we let that concentration and that focus on chanting the first Hare actually flourish into the mantra, guide us and, you know, let's say, like on a river, we just flow into the mantra. And then internal and external purity, what could this be? I mean, external purity, we pretty much know that. Yes. That's correct. External purity, you know, the purity which we, you know, externally do, taking shower and everything, is very much important for mind control, actually, and for, you know, the control of desires. It is explained that, I forgot where I read it, it was just recently, that taking showers in the morning and in the evening actually helps control any kind of material desires. So external purity is very important. Because as I said in the beginning, if you remember, we perceive things externally through the senses, so that's why they have a direct influence on the mind, on our subtle being, and vice versa, the subtle body has an influence of the gross body. So. But internal mood, we chanted one day in the association of Tulsi, explained that we try to associate with, you know, devotees who have been perfected on the path to chanting. There's many different examples given, like inviting your spiritual master to sit next to you while you chant, offering him arati, washing his feet before we start chanting, and actually, you know, asking him to be present to guide us. Then the other processes were steadfastness. That would represent that no matter what happens in the course of our chanting, even if there is some disturbances that appear, we should just continue chanting. Try and continue and continue and continue. Be very, very persistent in our devotional service. And for that also, you know, the fifth aspect, having patience. You know, not expecting not thinking that, you know, we are achievers, right? But we are receivers of the holy name. Yeah, I like Bhakti Charu. No, it wasn't Bhakti Charu. Chandramouli Maharaj once said in Croatian or summer camp, someone asked him, so what is bhakti? You know, can you define it? And he said, simply, bhakti is not what we feel. Bhakti is what we want Krishna to feel. So this is this steadfastness and patience. We're really chanting for Krishna. And then the last one, last step to bettering our japa is contemplating on the meaning of the mantra. Srila Prabhupada gave us, you know, a very, let's say, a nutshell meaning. It's like, dear Lord, please accept me. In these few words, actually, everything is in there. You know, we are asking the Lord to please accept us. We're trying to build a relationship to Him. We're trying to serve Him in this way, and we're contemplating on the meaning of the mantra. So this is the bhakti aspect, or abhideya tattva. And then Bhagavan, the last item, represents, you know, the prayojana tattva, or the goal of our spiritual practices, which is actually Krishna prema. I remember once, one of our classes, one of our teachers, I think it was Gopinath Acharya Prabhu, he said, you know, the goal of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas is not only Krishna, it's Krishna prema. Because, you know, we don't just want to see Krishna, we actually want to serve Krishna. We want to have a relationship to Krishna. So that's our prayojana, Krishna prema. And if we chant in this, you know, bhakti triangle, then the holy name will actually reveal himself to us. So this is, you know, imagine a triangle. You have a bhakti, you have a bhakta, and you have a bhagavan. You know, and chanting and being connected in this way, in this triangle, keeping these three things in mind, and taking shelter of these three things will actually, you know, will actually reveal everything what we need, especially in chanting. So that's pretty much what I thought to say. Maybe I can, as a conclusion, just read, you know, some nice, just like a nice quotation from Sachinanand Maharaja's book. He praises the Lord from the Adi Purana. He says, there is no vow like chanting the holy name, no knowledge superior to it, no meditation which comes anywhere near it, and it gives the highest result. No penance is equal to it, and nothing is as potent or powerful as the holy name. Chanting is the greatest act of piety and the supreme refuge. Even the words of the Vedas do not possess sufficient power to describe its magnitude. Chanting is the highest path to liberation, peace, and eternal life. It is the pinnacle of devotion, the heart's joyous proclivity, and attraction to the best form of remembrance of the Supreme Lord. The holy name has appeared solely for the benefit of the living entities as their Lord and Master, their supreme worshipable object, and their spiritual guide and mentor. So this is the holy name for us. So I think I'll stop here. If there's any comments, questions, yeah, chastisement. The beginning of the Kali Yuga? Well, I mean, from what I've understood, when they explain that, for example, in, you know, in Satya Yuga, the process for, you know, attaining perfection was meditation, it doesn't mean that the other processes were not there. It doesn't mean that those who have, you know, tried to attain perfection, there was only meditation. There was people who were performing, you know, yagyas and chanting and rituals and everything. So from this I can understand that, like, at the end of when, you know, when the Srimad Bhagavatam was recited, was actually for the sake of delivering the souls from this material world. So what is the main purpose? What is the question that has been asked in the Srimad Bhagavatam? It was, you know, what is a man supposed to do at the end of his life? And the conclusion is like Shravanam and Kirtanam, right? So until Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, there was, you know, there was chanting going on. There was practices performed. I mean, if you want to look at it historically, we had a whole class on, like, what happened from, you know, 7th century, you know, from Ramanuja, Madhva, you know, Shankara, Buddhist, and there was all kinds of things. You know, there was renunciation, there was monks, there was chanting, there were sacrifices. There was many things actually being performed. One of them was chanting. The Alvars used to chant. I don't know if you know the Alvars. They're This is it's explained that the Bhakti tradition comes from the Alvars. They're a group of people from South India who believed in Vishnu and who very much emphasized devotion and chanting. So the processes were there, but what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did is he gave a very, very condensed and a very specific type of chanting, and it's that chanting with a certain mood. That's the Vipralamba Bhav. That's the unique aspect of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Because the Madhvas chant, the Nimbarkas chant, the Vallabhas chant, you know, Ramanuja's chant, everybody chants the holy name. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave that mood of chanting in separation. That's the specific aspect, if that sense. Okay. As I said before, faith is not something we can develop with our material mind and material intelligence. It's coming from the soul. And in our Shastras explain, the way we can have this certain faith is actually by associating with those who have faith. Maharaj mentioned this in the retreat. He says, when we meet a person who has genuine faith in devotional service, genuine an understanding of the holy name, by associating with them, that faith actually rubs, you know, on our soul. This is, we get actually a certain aspect of the faith, like planting the seed. We also get the seed of faith. So actually, this is the reason, I mean, I know personally when I was in America last summer and we were traveling and there was like so many festivals and all these yoga festivals and things, and there's so many people nowadays who chant, so many. It's incredible, you know. Yoga scene, people chanting Krishna's name, Radha's name, Durga's name, Hanuman's name, Lord Ram's name. They're chanting and chanting and chanting. They're dancing, you know, they're vegetarians. But, you know, especially, you know, I've seen it in the East Coast. But, you know, what is really, you know, what is happening with them? It says that only when they come in contact with devotees, you know, with someone like who preaches there, like Radhanath Swami, you know, this is where they really feel, wow, this is the real thing. People were coming up to me when we were in these festivals, and they would say, you know, yeah, we chant, we have our guru, and it's all nice, but there's something about you guys when you chant. You know, there's something, you know, much more potent. And I think it's that faith. It's that who we follow. We don't chant for selfish reasons, to feel better, to have peace. Actually, we're trying not to. We are following Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We're trying to chant to please Krishna. So even those people, like you said, like Buddhist or whoever come, they can feel the difference. And, you know, to, let's say, accelerate that, the more they associate with devotees, the more their faith will be strengthened. Yeah. Now, is there anybody maybe who would like to share their experience of the Japa retreat? It doesn't have to be like, I had, I don't know what, my life was changed, but it's something... Mm-hmm. Connect. So it worked for you, huh? Yeah, that's, you know, just as a concluding word, this is the actually the potency of coming together in association with devotees, is that what happens is when we start chanting on our own, I mean, at least this is what I experienced, there's so many thoughts coming up. This and that, and like desires and this, and you know, it seems like you just can't control it. And what's actually happening is that all these deep-rooted samskaras from the unconscious mind start to, you know, bubble up on the surface slowly as we become more and more actually, you know, in touch with our spiritual. It just starts bubbling up. So, you know, we can't pretty much do much about it because they're within us. It's the result of our material existence. But what we can do, and why this japa retreat is useful, is that we imprint deep spiritual impressions then on our subconsciousness. You know, like she said, you know, she had a certain realization, she had a certain experience. So this is a deep-rooted and a spiritual experience within our subconsciousness. And the more we have of these, the more we are actually, I think, lucky that at the time of death we will remember, you know, one of these experiences and hopefully, you know, remember Krishna in this way. So, thank you very much. And all glories to Nice. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.